You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Come from you, get to people, yeah.
What are you gonna
giving up a second thought about you now. Ghetto people,
who you gonna turn to next?
Tell me, people, you gotta take a look at yourself, yeah. Ghetto people,
where do you wanna be?
Where you wanna be?
Tell me what your life is.
What's with your life?
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe, civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement: Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Denmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashe. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotep family, hope everything is well with you today. Hope you had a great weekend. Hope you had a chance to do all the things you wanted to do, need do, should do, must do, can do, and will do. And I hope the weather was accommodating for you to do it. But if it wasn't, I know you got it done anyway. Because that's the kind of brother and sister that you is. And we love you for it. Believe me, we do. This is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12, that's Eastern Time, 10 to 12 Central Time, 9 to 11 Mountain Time, and 8 to 10 Pacific Time, or any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can always go to our archives and check out previously recorded programs that are dated and titled. I suggest that you do so because Brother Kwaku has done some good work in preparing those programs. It is a beautiful day. It's February, so it's American, African, or African, American African History Month. I like to say it like that because not just that we need to learn the history of what we have done here, but we also need to learn the history of what we have done on our motherland and constantly make that connection. Because our history should be a constant forward flow. And unfortunately, because of the disruption, because of the captivity, many times our people begin our history. Unfortunately, some even begin it with our captivity, as if we had done nothing previous to that point. And some of our people, unfortunately, because they've been so whitewashed, they don't even think about anything beyond that particular point. So we'll talk about the person who started it all, of course, Dr. Carter G. Woodson, you know, a man who I've admired and respect. So we'll talk about that and some other things. And, of course, you can join us at 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. Other programming that we have here on Time for an Awakening Media, this program, once again, all the times they're going to give at Eastern Times, this program every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. On Mondays, Acres of Diamonds, Public Affairs Program with Brother Wahad, and that is from 6 to 8, followed by Let's Buy Black, 365, from 8 to 9. After that program is Conversations, Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey. Black Reality Think Tank is on Tuesdays at 8 p.m. 8 to 10 p.m. is Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers. On Wednesdays, it's Revive with Sister POC, Proof of Consciousness, from 8 to 10. On Thursdays, Relationships with Joy and Troy at 7 p.m. On Fridays, Esoteric Review with Sister Marcy Lee from 1 to 2, following my program on Friday. And if you had a chance to listen this past Friday, outstanding program and very entertaining, but most importantly, very informational, Sister Marcy Lee. So give her a listen every Friday right after my program, Esoteric Review. Friday evening, if it's Friday,
and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, you know it's time for an awakening. That's right, time for an awakening on Fridays with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. On Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., I keep saying it, but you got to understand it ain't me. It is Sister POC. And her program Revive is on Sunday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And then on Sunday evening, once again, it's 7 p.m., it's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And in every
this
Monday,
call is being recorded.
Every Monday through Friday, every Monday through Friday, it is the Warren Ballantyne Show from 10 p.m. Eastern to 12 a.m. right here on Time for an Awakening Media. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. We Buy Black. I'm looking at the website right now, WeBuyBlack.com, and looking at the products that they have, the promotion to donate to build a grocery, to build a supermarket here in the Atlanta area, but most importantly around the country. And that's what our program, Us Lifting Us, is about as well. You know, I would suggest that that's what we do. That's what we should do. You know that. You know, they have a lot of good products, though. Champ Boxer Shorts, the toothbrush company that they have, stuff for your styling gel, for your hair, and five-step facial system. Of course, they have some apparel for We Buy Black, some hoodies and so forth, the activated charcoal facial cleaner, the toothbrushes, the batteries, the Harriet Tubman batteries so you can light the way, and the laundry detergent, True Laundry Detergent, and the natural mouthwash and tooth powder. That's a processed natural deodorant. And then they have categories of stuff you can get. So go online to WeBuyBlack.com. WeBuyBlack.com. Go online. Because you can get everything you need from WeBuyBlack.com for American African-owned businesses that we produce. Africa for the Africans. Brother Bamani Tahemba has another round of trips going to Africa this year. He has four of them. The first one starting in April 3rd through the 13th for $3,300, going to Senegal and Gambia. Going to Senegal and Gambia. Then the next trip, May 25th through June 5th, going to Ghana. That's for $3,700. Then the next trip is South African Roots and Cultural Tour, November 20th through the 30th. That's also for $3,700. And then the Ghana Repatriation Investment Tour, once again, December 22nd to January 3rd, 2021, also for $3,100. And they have a payment plan that you could get on. I mean, he's showing pictures of the group he just took to Africa. Lovely group that he took to Africa back last month. Well, not January, but in December. I mean, man, about 20 of them. I'm telling you, you know, Brother Bamani Tahemba, I love him. I appreciate him very much. I'll have him on the program, but you got to reach out to Brother Bamani. AfricaForTheAfricans.org. The number to call is 404-931-9429. 404-931-9429. You want to see pictures of those tours? Go to Facebook.com/Bomani. You want to see some video of those tours? Go to YouTube.com/Bomani2007. Africa for the Africans. Shrine of the Black Madonna. Shrine of the Black Madonna located here in Atlanta in the West End. And believe me, the Shrine of the Black Madonna's got it all. Their store hours are Wednesday through Saturday from 12 to 7 and Sunday from 1 to 3. And they have furniture, they have clothing, they have artwork, they have the red, black, and green shoes and the gas shoes. They have it all. But most importantly, they have books. It is a bookstore. And if you contact the Shrine at 404-549-8676, 404-549-8676, and find out if they have the book that you desire. But they don't, they'll get it for you. Believe me, they will. They also have an African Holocaust Museum located right there in the Shrine. And they have a program every Saturday the African History Program, the multimedia presentation of Know Thyself. Every Saturday is free and open to the public from 1:30 to 3:30. I attended it this week, great class, and there was a good number of people there as well. And that's Bubba Olatunji. He does an outstanding job of instruction. But if you can't make that, but you want that information, you can get it. That's right, at the African History Club Multimedia Library that they have. It is now 7 terabytes of African enlightenment. In fact, I was talking with a brother who had bought him a 10-terabyte hard drive, external hard drive. And so now he has 3 terabytes that he can put additional information on because it's going to continue to grow. And that's what I plan to do because I do have the one that I have. Man, that's 4.5. So I'm lacking 2.5 terabytes of information. So I'm going to get that together. Shrine of the Black Madonna. The Medu Bookstore, and the Medu Bookstore is located in the Greenbrier Mall, open Monday through Saturday from 10 to 9 and on Sunday from 12 to 6 in the Greenbrier Mall. My sister's lovely sister, I saw her this past Friday, and the kiosk of We Buy Black is right next to, of course, the Medu Bookstore. So if you're there, you're right there, right there. And the number to call is 404-346-3263, 404-346-3263, and that is the Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. And my good brother, Gazim Diajamu, that's right, the Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore, the Black Dot, 404-519-8107. 404-519-8107. They also have the red, black, and green shoes, and they have an array of things as well. Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa. Their Thursday night broadcast every Thursday night at 9 p.m. And the number to call is 929-477-2789. 929-477-2789 at 9 p.m. on Thursdays. And brothers and sisters, the conference is coming up. The meet and greet will be public. All other events are for members only. And that is March 13th, 14th, and 15th here in Atlanta. It's going to be at the Interdenominational Theological Center here on the campus of Morris Brown University, 700 MLK Drive here in Atlanta. So please attend. There is a fee. I'll go over those fees with you. There was an early registration fee. I didn't get that information. But the fee right now is $75, and it's available until the end of this month. And then after that, it's $85, which wouldn't, you know, because after that, it's, the conference is up. So if you want to save that $10, please give go to the website or give a call at 404-592-2780. 404-592-2780. Us Lifting Us. Go to the website, www.usliftingus.com. And I hope to see you there. We can talk about the things that we are going to do to help the economic situation in our community. Us Lifting Us. Ackerman Institute, they had the complementarity conference this past Saturday. I didn't attend the conference. I stopped in and towards the end and talked to some of the brothers and seen some of the sisters coming in, and they understand that everything went well. I'm glad to hear that. I unfortunately did not attend the conference, to be honest. You know, but I will continue to support Baba Baruti and Sister Yabaruti in their efforts to educate our people. Ackerman Institute, make check money order out to Ackerman Institute. Send it to P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia, 30310. That is Ackerman Institute, P.O. Box 10786. If you want to donate by Cash App or PayPal, you can do so. You know, go to there and put in the dollar sign, YAA, the letter M, and then Baruti, B-A-R-U-T-I, Ackerman Institute. They are educating our young warriors. They're independent. They get no money from outside. But we must support it. Another thing we must support is, and I'm on the website right now, and that is Sanjay-Iti, Sister Gabrielle Riro, and some just beautiful pictures of our young children and the work that they're doing with the brothers and sisters in Haiti in the rural area, providing. Sanjay is a group of Haitian and international humanitarians who collaborated to uplift the Haitian community through education, economic development, and health promotion. The long-term vision is to provide the tools for Haitians to be self-sustaining, to help them help themselves. Sanjay-Haiti, which means remember Haiti, was founded to rebuild Haiti in a sustainable manner and in a way that will bring hope, pride, and dignity to the Haitians that have been impacted by the organization. That's my good sister. She deserves to be supported. So please go to that website for Sanjay-Haiti. The Enyé Sesem. Let me go back. Apologize. I missed one, of course, and that's Dr. Rinoco. Dr. Rinoco Rashidi. Okay. You have the people. He's coming back from the tour in Senegal, Gambia, and Guinea-Bissau. He's coming back tomorrow. And, of course, he has the upcoming tour later this year going to Uganda and Rwanda, October 5th through the 16th. And it's just like a dynamite tour. That's for $4,100. Excuse me. He also has a payment plan established as well. And so please go to the website, drrinoco.com, drrinoco.com for his tours, Rwanda, Uganda, and Rwanda, October 15th through the 16th, later this year. So, the Enyé Sesem of Daily Revolutionary Thought. February 2nd. Whoever the white race does not consort with, it will crush out. Bishop Henry McNeil Turner. Yeah, I always like this great quote by Bishop Henry McNeil Turner. God is black. He's got to be black, because if God is a white man, there is no hope. Ooh. Bishop McNeil Turner. The vicious, unfathomable inhumanity that others have inflicted upon us has continued for more than two millennia. We call this genocidal attempt to savagely rip Africans from our native culture and selves and entirely remove us as a people from this planet by frightened, power-hungry others, the Maafa. This term refers to the entirety of the effort Europeans and others have put into trying to destroy the African continent, African culture, and ultimately African people. The Maafa includes the unprovoked wars of invasion to conquer the African continent, the missionary efforts from the north and east to remove us from our spirit, and consciously ignorant undermining of African cultural activities and sensibilities, the brutal and inhumane capture of Africans for enslavement and the removal of Africans from other lands, the colonization of African political systems, the balkanization of formerly peaceful ethnic groups, and mass theft of African resources, the confiscation of African lands and regulation of Africans into infertile soil, the global dehumanization of Africans, and the brutalization, rape, torture, and murder of hundreds of millions of Africans, including the prevention of birth of all the descendants who murdered individuals who would have produced future generations. It is a genocide in progress. Affirm, I remember. Affirm, I remember. Brothers and sisters, we must remember this. We must remember the Maafa. Remember what happened to our ancestors. February 3rd. I'm convinced that the black man will only reach his full potential when he learns to draw upon the strength and insights of the black woman. Manning Marble. We express a deep sense of love and humanity when we give sincere compliments to each other. African men and women have to reclaim and relearn how to complement each other without reading into it in altruistic self-love. A compliment to you at the same time is a compliment to me. Your beauty and style are always my beauty and style because you reflect me. We are one. We have to learn to be able to give and accept praise and deserve flattery without reading, assuming that the giver is trying to get into our pants or get into our pockets. Loving people compliment each other. They thrive on making each other feel good about themselves. Ashe. Affirm, I'm a loving African. Affirm, I am a loving African. It comes on the heels of the complementarity workshops that Baba Baruti and Sister Ya Baruti gave this past Saturday. We need each other. We must begin to love and respect each other. We must begin to work with our brothers and sisters, and brothers and sisters must work with each other. Sisters must work with sisters to prepare them, and brothers must work with brothers to encourage and prepare them. It is a process that is vitally necessary if we're going to be a people again, because it says in my libation at the beginning, the reason why we don't have good community life is because we don't have good family life. That is the foundation of community life. It is the root. The family life situation is the root of everything that should and could happen for African people. But we know what has been disruptive, but we cannot cry about it. We got to be about it. We know what they have done, and they will continue to do. That's why it's vitally important that we come together to change it. This is February. And February is started out with Carter G. Woodson, the man who I have high regard and respect for. Carter G. Woodson, two people in our history that I have high regard for, and that's Carter G. Woodson and Dr. John Henry Clark. Probably Dr. John Henry Clark most because I had the opportunity to hear him, but even deeper, the pleasure and the honor to have lunch with him is probably, for me, one of the highlights of my life, along with the birth of my daughters and birth of my two grandsons. But, you know, having the opportunity to literally sit at the feet of a master teacher, a real Jegna. It was an honor. It happened at the Indiana Black Expo. In fact, I always remember that Indiana Black Expo because of the people who were there. Khalid Muhammad, Tupac Shakur, Anthony Browder. I bought the Nile Valley just had came out. Nile Valley Contributions to Civilization just had came out. I mean, just Muhammad Ali. See, they have a boxing tournament there at the, it's held in the Indiana Convention Center, and they have a boxing tournament within that of all the other things that are going on, you know, and it's named after Muhammad Ali. And there he was. That's the third time I had met. Actually, that was the second time. The third time I met him at the Muhammad Ali Center. The first time when I was a young man, a teenager. I was a teenager. And I saw him in Milwaukee at Muhammad's Mosque number 3. Muhammad's Mosque number 3, which was then located on King. It wasn't called King Drive, but it was King Drive and Wright. And, you know, if you know me, you know I love Muhammad Ali. But also I love our scholars, and two of the scholars that I have a great affection for is Dr. John Henry Clark and of course Dr. Carter Godwin Woodson. Woodson was born in December 19th, 1875, and he passed April 3rd, 1950. He was born in New Canton, Virginia. And, of course, his parents had been in captivity. They were enslaved. And they were both not literate. They were illiterate, or they couldn't read. But they had to work and have a farm. And so Woodson couldn't go to school, but he was an intelligent young man. He always believed in education. And he was pretty much self-taught. And at the age of 17, he tried to follow his brother to Huntington, West Virginia, where he would hope to attend a brand new secondary school, Douglas High School. Well, he couldn't. He still had to work in the coal fields of West Virginia until finally he got the opportunity to go to school. And he received his diploma in 2 years. And then, in fact, he taught right after that. And in 1900, he was selected as the principal of the Douglas High School, where he had earned his high school diploma from. And he went, and of course, he went to Bear College in Kentucky to get his bachelor's. And then he got, and if he even taught from 1903 to 19, in the Philippines. Woodson later attended the University of Chicago. That's where he got his bachelor's. And then, of course, he got his master's. Excuse me. He got his master's and his PhD. He got his PhD from Harvard University in 1912. He was the second American African to earn a doctorate degree from Harvard University. W.E.B. Du Bois was the first. Du Bois was the first. And he had an interesting career. You know, I've seen many pictures of Carter G. Woodson. I probably, you have too, seen pictures of Carter G. Woodson. And what was interesting, and the one they use here is the one where he was very young, you know. And he's very young. And I've seen him all the way up to probably the time that, you know, that he made his transition. And I think about 4 or 5 pictures I've seen of Woodson. And he never smiled. And I always ask myself, you know, why didn't, you know, what, did he have bad teeth, a wax smile or something? But he never smiled. But then I understood and realized, because of who he was and what he devoted his life work to, that there was nothing to smile about. Wasn't a damn thing to smile about. Because when you do to a people what has been done to us, it ain't funny. And he understood that we need to reclaim, recapture, and restore the history of our people and to present it to us. Because it says in the Hadith, the sayings of Prophet Muhammad in Islam, it says he, I don't use he, I say they, because men and women work together. They must work together. They must learn together. They must strive together, and they must build together. So they who put their foot on the path to seeking knowledge, they go in the way of God until they return. I repeat, they who put their foot on the path to seeking knowledge, they go in the way of God until they return. What it means, you never return, because nobody knows it all. You don't. I sure don't. The so-called experts don't. But God. And God inspires you. God motivates you. God leads you. And that's what it did to Carter G. Woodson. It took him all the way to Harvard University to get that doctorate degree. But what he did not see in his educational journey was the history, achievements, and accomplishments of African people, whether on the continent or here in this hemisphere. He did not see it. So he dedicated his life to, once again, reclaiming, recapturing, and restoring the history of our people. He started many publications. Of course, the Association for the Study of Negro Life and History back then, which is now the Association for the Study of American African Life and History. And of course, he was in Chicago, staying at the Wabash YMCA. And, you know, that's where he created the Association of the Study in Chicago. And then, of course, he moved around a lot. But there was one thing that I always thought that was interesting, that when he was in D.C., because, you know, he wound up being, and that's deep, isn't it, that he had a doctorate degree from Harvard University, and he was a principal, although he did teach at Howard University, but he was a principal at a school in D.C., and there was a sister, because he was dedicated. He was dedicated to his work. And, you know, he died April 3rd, 1950, at the age of 74. And, in fact, when I was in D.C. 2 years ago for Tony Browder's Chemetamorphosis, and had a chance to see where he parked there with a statue of Woodson, so forth. But I always thought this was interesting because this sister named Dorothy Porter Wesley recalled, Woodson would wrap up his publications, take them to the post office, and then have dinner at the YMCA. He would teasingly decline her offer for an invitation, saying, no, you're trying to marry me off. I am married to my work. Woodson's most treasured ambition is a six-volume Encyclopedia Africana, which was completed at the time of his transition. Carter G. Woodson. Starting Negro History Week in 1926, Woodson's other far-reaching activities include the founding of the 1920 as an Associated Publisher in D.C., then enable publications of books concerning American Africans and Africans that might not have been supported in the rest of the market. Of course not. He founded Negro History Week in 1926. Which is now known as, and which I say, African and American African History Month. He created the Negro History Bulletin, developed for teachers in elementaries and high schools. So, because we were omitted from the text that we were given, all the textbooks were coming from Caucasians, no matter where the school was, and usually the hand-me-down books from the Caucasians were given to us. So, and then in subsidizing of research in African history, he wrote numerous articles, books on us, the Negro in our history, reached its 11th edition when it sold over 90,000 copies. What a great man, Carter G. Woodson. That's why, you know, and of course, he started this month in honor of Frederick Douglass. They say Abraham Lincoln, he probably did because he didn't know Lincoln wasn't about shit. Excuse me, wasn't about sugar, honey, iced tea. Lincoln wasn't about sugar, honey, iced tea. You know, but because of the emancipation, he and his birthday, Lincoln's birthday is in this month, and so is Carter G., so is Frederick Douglass. Frederick Douglass, who was born in captivity in Maryland, and his father was the Caucasian captor, and his mother, of course, and his mother said, I don't know when your birthday is, but you are my heart. You are my Valentine. So Frederick Douglass chose February 14th to be his birthday, and so Carter G. Woodson honored him to have Negro History Week at that time of the week that would be Frederick Douglass's birthday, which later evolved into the month. In 1976, it was designated. It started to begin, you know, as a month, expanding in 1970. But in 1976, the U.S., who was president? Jimmy Carter? 76, yeah. And designated the month. And I know there are many who talk about, well, month, you know, we should have a 20. Yes, it should be. It is this way. It is that way here. And definitely on this program, our history is 24/7, 365, no doubt about it. But because of what has happened to us here, we at least need to focus, to put an attention. And that's why it's important that we observe and have. Because, I mean, I remember seeing a piece on Morgan Freeman, you know, was arguing heavily against Black History Month, you know. And I understood to some degree, but not understanding truly, you know. Now, because it's almost like, no, we shouldn't have it. Then what should we have? That's the point. If we don't have it, what should we have? Because just you saying we shouldn't have it, this society is not going to correct it. It's going to continue as business as usual. Yes, I agree. Just like Dr. John Henry Clark said, the Black History Month is just the missing pages of American history. That's all it is. But of course, those pages will continue to be missed and missing because why? They control it. And in fact, today, they're trying to make it seem that our captivity did not happen, that we were somehow indentured servants, or we came here as immigrants, not as captives. Because when you have an evil entity who is always constantly writing and rewriting history to benefit themselves, I mean, even the commercial I've seen of ancient Kemetic people, it was a commercial, I can't remember whose commercial it was, but the people look Caucasian. We know that's not the truth, but the general society continues to believe that is the truth because why? They continue to perpetuate it. That's why it's important that we learn our history from hopefully the very beginning. The very beginning of our existence as African people, particularly on the continent and throughout the diaspora. And definitely here, because we got to understand, we did some monumental things here. We did some monumental things here in spite of segregation, captivity, humiliation, brutality, lynching, fear. And we've done some great things. We've done some things that we believe that other humans could not have done or not be able to do. So I'm saying, you know, we need to celebrate ourselves. And if there's any time that we have a chance to celebrate ourselves, we must do it. Whether it's Kwanzaa or whether it's this month or any other time. Juneteenth, well, you know, I have problems with Juneteenth, but it's a time to reflect on who we are and what happened. So, you know, Juneteenth, whatever the celebration is, I'm very serious about May 25th. May 25th is African Liberation Day. I will be seriously promoting and pushing as the day comes along. And on that day, I don't know, am I broadcasting on that day? I don't know if I am or not, but I know one thing. May 25th. Yes, I am. That's a Monday. I'll be broadcasting on that day. It's going to be a great day. And we'll talk about African liberation. Period. On the continent, across that. That is the most important day. Not Juneteenth Day. Not any other day. African Liberation Day. Because that's what needs to happen. That's what we are fighting for. That's what we are striving for. That Africa is totally liberated. That Africa is independent. Africa is self-determining. Africa is liberated. Africa is sovereign. That's what we're fighting for. In fact, I want to go to this particular piece that I want to talk about in conjunction with this, and that is African Liberation Day or African Sovereignty. Picked this up in the this was sent to me by my good sister, Dr. Marimba Ani. I'm going to read this to you because I think that we need to understand where we're coming from. And there's no better chance to understand where we're coming from than to deal with it, you know, here in America. It's important that we do this. Vitally important. Sister Mama Marimba Ani, Dr. Ani. We have our thinkers, our visionaries, our revolutionaries, and even our African sovereignists. We must not be afraid to listen, to think, and to act. We must honor them. This statement from Nana Julius Nyerere was written almost 55 years ago. Of course, we also have to reclaim the North and get rid of the descendants of invaders. Ashe. We got to. In fact, that was one of the discussions we had when I was in Venezuela with some sisters from Africa. You know, we're stating to them, if you're going to be African, you stay. If you ain't going to be African, you got to go. This is our continent. I don't give a damn how long you've been here. This is our continent. Especially if you're going to be African, you sure in the hell got to stop doing what you're doing. Castrating our brothers, enslaving our brothers and sisters, selling them off to for organ harvesting. I wish we had them. Let me read. The Nature and Requirements of African Unity by Julius Nyerere. Unity is necessary for the safety, the integrity, and the development of Africa. If it does not secure these essentials, it is pointless. Unity must prevent the political exploitation of our fears and needs by those outside of Africa. It must ensure that Africa is able to police itself effectively and build a minimum defense against outside aggression. And it must prevent different parts of Africa from competing one against the other for economic favors in return for political concessions. Furthermore, unity must also ensure that Africa becomes one market, that its people cease to be divided by customs, post, and tariff walls along hundreds of frontiers. And it must achieve that by instituting a single currency throughout the continent. These are the essentials, and they require that in relation to the outside world, the national states of Africa must cease. The national states of Africa must cease to exist. They must be replaced by Africa. National sovereignty, in short, must be surrendered by the nation states in favor of an all-African government. Ashe. 1965, the summer of 1965. We need maximum defense systems that operate throughout the African world. Not minimum, but maximum. Sister Mama Marimba Ani sent that, and I think it's just on point. I don't know about you, it's on point. It's definitely on point for this program because that's what we're about. That's what we espouse on this program. So this is our first program of this month. We'll talk about other great people in the month and people that may or may not have heard of. And if you want to talk about somebody, please give us a call. You know, I know my sister D. Best did a good job this past Friday when we talked about Sister Zia White, who was a aviator after Bessie Coleman in Texas, and her husband had a flight school and everything. She lived to be 106. She died last year. We talked about the Green Book and its effect for us and its ability for us to move throughout the country safely, finding where it was places that we could stay and places where we could eat and so forth. And we talked about Dr. Leon Sullivan, Reverend Leon Sullivan in Philadelphia and the OIC program, which of course I'm greatly indebted for, because when OIC opened up in Milwaukee in 1970, I was able to get my GED program. I had dropped out of school. I dropped out of high school. And I got my GED. And because of that, when the fire department was going through affirmative action program, I could take advantage. If I hadn't done that, I couldn't have. So I'm thankful. Thankful for OIC, especially Mr. Green, Brother Green. Yeah, he was one of my instructors at OIC. Every time I see Brother Green, I always give him love. Appreciate him. Appreciate him tremendously. He said, I mean, I appreciate it. Look how you turned out. I said, hey, if I have any height at all, it's because I stand on your shoulders. Yep. And of course, the height that Carter G. Woodson attained and rose to is because he stands on the shoulders of men that he worked with. You know, Arthur Schomburg, the Harlem History Club, Herbert Harrison, Thomas Fortin, Du Bois, all these were the contemporaries of Carter G. Woodson. You know, his Miseducation of the Negro, which was written in 1933, is just as applicable today, just as germane today as it was when he wrote it in 1933. Coming up damn near 100 years ago. And to me, 100 years ago, as he wrote that, if it's still that way today, it's a damn shame. It is a damn shame. So, because to me, when I look at this society, I look at how it's run and those who are in the position, it's clear to me we have to get out. It's clear to me that we should be preparing to make that exodus. In the Bible, the exodus did not happen. The exodus that is written about in the Bible, the movies, the Ten Commandments, the movie itself, Exodus, with Christian Bale, and which was the most recent, about 3 or so years ago, that did not happen physically. It did not happen historically. But it must happen. It must happen in this time. We must have an exodus. And our preparation for it is gaining the knowledge of ourselves and preparing ourselves, particularly in a number of fields of work to build. This is nation building. We must have welders, carpenters, masons, electricians, plumbers. We must have city planners. We need all of that. And we need that from here and over there. We must educate ourselves simultaneously or with each other. Because it's not about we're going to do it and we're going to go over to Africa and do it. No, no. It's that we're coming to help do it for ourselves. We're coming to help you help us. It is ours. We're going home. We're going home. To build our home up. Our home is the richest place on this planet. Our home. But we're projected in an image of us as the poorest people on the planet. Is something wrong with that? We need to change that narrative. We need to control that narrative. We need to control everything that happens about us as African people. The reason why Carter G. Woodson was doing what he was doing is because he understood, by informing us, educating us, instilling a sense of pride in us and a sense of possibility and our ability to do. And now we need to take it a step further to educate ourselves for liberation. We're going to take a break. Go going off here, but you know I do that from time to time. Sometimes necessarily. You know, sometimes it just needs to be done. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We're going to take a break. You'll be right back. You stay with us, okay?
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
We'll be right back.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, this is African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. Other programming that, once again, that we have here on Time for Awakening Media every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. This program, African Perspectives, every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. On Mondays, Acres of Diamonds from 6 to 8, followed by Let's Buy Black 365 from 8 to 9, and then Conversations, Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey from 9 to 10. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. On Wednesdays, Revive with Sister POC from 8 to 10. On Thursdays, Relationships with Joy and Troy. Relationships with Joy and Troy on Thursdays at 7 p.m. And then on Fridays, Esoteric Review with Sister Marcy Lee, immediately following African Perspectives. From 1 to 2, Esoteric Review with Sister Marcy Lee. And then Friday evening, if it's 8 p.m. on Friday, you know it's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And then on Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., Revive with Sister POC, followed on Sunday evening with Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard at 7 p.m. And then Monday through Friday from 10 p.m. Eastern to 12 a.m. is the Warren Ballantyne Show right here on Time for an Awakening Media. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. Welcome back, brothers and sisters. We're going to talk about African History Month. This is February, and now we know. And you know what was interesting? I used to tell the young people I worked with, I said, who knows about Carter G. Woodson? Who ever heard of Carter? I mean, I'm talking about young people, and I'm talking about even teenagers. They didn't know. They didn't know. I said, posed the question, why is February Black History Month? Because it's the shortest month of the year. That's what they gave us. They didn't know. Man, I tell you. Man. So, we're going to, I saw this particular piece, don't know where I got it from, but it's dated. So I'm going to use an updated, because it's from 2012. It's from 2012. Why American, African, or African and American African History Month should be called African Liberation Month. History has a weapon of struggle. February 6, 2012, Brother Jamu Ingeweya changed the conversation, support rebel. Okay. As American African History Month begins, we are reposting this piece by Brother Jamu. We are now in February, and for Africans in North America, it is a significant month. It is usually observed as Black History Month. It has taken an opportunity to acknowledge African people's struggles, achievements, and commemorate significant moments in the fight against European, Caucasian, extremism, racism, and privilege, better known as white supremacy, capitalism, sexism, and other forms of oppression. Some of us use this month to reflect and rededicate ourselves to the revolutionary or radical African political tradition. In spite of the collective self-criticism, are we at the point where Black History Month is due for a name change and focus? I say yes. Names are quite important to resistance. It was no accident that the enslavement of Africans were taken across the Sahara Desert and ended up with Arabian names, and those who went by the Atlantic Ocean now has European names imposed on them. Denying a people their name
is a classic method of colonization and cultural imperialism. It is used to weaken collective consciousness, which is critical to building a resistant culture. American African or African American African History Month started out as Negro History and Literature Week in 1926 by the fraternity Omega Psi Phi. Carter G. Woodson was the guiding influence behind this development, and he changed the name to Negro History Week in 1926. That year is generally acknowledged as the official start of this political observance. And in 1976, Negro History Week was transformed into a month-long celebration reborn as Black History Month. Black History Month has since become more about cultural puffery than the politics of emancipation. That's a good point. Cultural puffery. Trade unions, school boards, corporations, and even government agencies are, for the most part, comfortable with the current toothless, non-challenging thrust of this month. Essentially, they have been allowed to co-opt it and channel its potential for radical consciousness raising and political involvement into Black First and Black Notables. Black First this, Black First that. And they still doing Black. I see that, you know, a lot of the stuff I see on Facebook when they talk about this person or that person, and particularly militarily and other stuff, man, I don't even give it a like. I don't. I sure in the hell ain't gonna give it a heart. Further, it serves as a platform to sell the virtues of integrating Africans into this racist, sexist, and capitalistic optical illusion that is America, that is European, that is Caucasian, whether it's here in this country or in Canada or in Europe or Australia. It's an illusion. One of the things that we observed about the focus of exploitation is their willing manipulation and transformation of acts of resistance into harmless and empty symbols. That state of affairs is not possible without the participation of the oppressed. Norman Otis Richmond, a Toronto-based journalist, is one of the main advocates in Canada for renaming African History Month has African Liberation Month. I couldn't agree more with his suggestion. African Liberation Month would assert the name of people whose struggle is being affirmed while clearly communicating to the people that the mission of this celebration is the cultivation of a cultural resistance of liberation. Let's make the commitment to consistently use African Liberation Month and not the other outdated name. It has exceeded its best before dated, so we ought to send it to the Museum of Outdated Social Negro History Week. And at the time, let me just say this, at the time that Carter G. Woodson did this, Negro History Week, where we have been led to believe we had never done a damn thing, that we were running around the jungle with a rag up our ass and a bone through our nose, never having created a civilization of any kind, of any worth, of any note. That's what I'm saying. Carter G. Woodson set his foot on the path to seeking knowledge, and it took him all the way to Harvard University. But what he did not see in all of those studies and all that he did, the history, achievements, and the accomplishments of African people, whether it was here in this country or anywhere. That's why he did what he did. That's why he dedicated his life to reclaiming, recapturing, restoring the history of our people, to present it to us. And this right here, this proposal right here, is taking the ultimate step further. Of equal importance is doing the work to make African liberation and social transformation central issues on our activism agenda in U.S. and Canada and beyond. I'm proposing the following endeavors, which ought to be among the priorities of political militants and the socially engaged during this African Liberation Month and beyond. In essence, we will be signaling our commitment to the liberation ethic within radical African political tradition. First, the community needs to devote the necessary resources to the assertion of this radical organizing political voice. Since the 1990s, police repression, criminalization, and surveillance of African Action Defense Committee and the political and economic retaliation against Arnold Miners for speaking frankly about police containment of Africans, the community has gone into a sort of political dormancy. We are at our political best when the politically advanced sectors in the community educate, organize, and mobilize for justice. It should be noted that it was the combativeness of the largely African youth participants in the Yonge Street uprising in May of 1992 that focused the government of the Ontario New Democratic Party to enact a slew of anti-racist initiatives. Secondly, it was absolutely necessary to engage in a structured and systematic political education and skills building program for existing activists and prospective ones. It is necessary to draw lessons from our past on the effectiveness of the process used to prepare and develop our activist base for today. Based on my experience and observations and reflections on our community activism, we have to take a path that consciously and methodologically equips our activists with the knowledge, skills, and attitude to wage a consistent and principled struggle against racism, sexism, capitalism, homophobia, and other forms of oppression. We cannot leave to chance the proper development of ideologically prepared and skilled activists. Thirdly, we need to seriously operationalize the message within Kwame Ture's, formerly known as Stokey, dictum. Organization is the weapon of the oppressed. Organization. Organized. When I talked about the ancient Kemet society, and we talk about it because it was a great society. It was the height. It was the model. And it was built on four things: study, communication, cooperation, organization. You've seen what they did there. You can go there today and seen what we did 5,000 years ago. Over 5,000 years ago. Because we studied. We communicated, we cooperated, we organized. Organization is the weapon of the oppressed. The radical and progressive forces in the community need to consolidate their ideas, efforts, and resources in organizations, coalitions, and alliances. We cannot continue to get by with fleeting committee-like entities that respond to an issue or organize a project, then and wither away. It is through durable organizations that we will be able to educate, organize, and mobilize Africans in working class communities and students in high schools, colleges, and universities, work in coalitions and alliance with allies, and address the issues prioritized by the oppressed and progressive sectors within our community. Fourthly, we must educate and organize Africans to self-fund the resistance or liberation work has to counter the corrosive impact of nonprofit industrial complex. The nonprofit industrial complex is a kind of counterinsurgency pacification program that has co-opted the community's sense of agency, its can-do spirit. Community workers are not likely to risk their jobs by facilitating radicalizing of consciousness and action of the people. For these nonprofits, they ain't gonna go all like that, and you know it. I've been involved in them. It is not political activism that is being used to challenge economic, social, and educational exploitation. Instead, we see the tranquilizer of foundation and government funding patching up the wounds of social oppression and putting the people to sleep politically. Social workers and social service workers have replaced political activists as the organizers within the community. It is not an encouraging development. We do not need to remind you that the person who pays the piper is the one who calls the tunes. Many of us do not think twice about giving money to our religious organizations. It is high time that we pony up or pay up a portion of our income and put it into the coffers of progressive African human rights and activist organizations. They are the ones fighting for your material interests and not organizations that are focused on spiritual, outwardly matters. Fifthly, we need to explore the development of a labor self-management strategy to provide employment and promote economic democracy. It is critical for the life within African community to counter right-wing forces that see our liberation as being adorned in the clothing of black capitalism or mimicking the ethnic capitalist enclaves that are spread across this diaspora. We must stand opposed to Caucasian or African capital exploiting the labor of the working class. Therefore, an anti-capitalist left ought to explore the development of a program of labor-controlled workplaces and enabling organizations. Six, priority must be given to creating independent labor organizations to organize and agitate around workplaces. Workplace issues that affect the organized and non-organized members of African working class. The radicalized constituency groups or affirmative action elected positions that are officially part of the Canadian labor movement are too compromised and powerless to be of relevancy to the radicalized working class at this moment. They can only become useful when we start to carry out critical educational organizing among union rank and file members. The pressure and initiative must come from the base. The purpose of this work among radicalized workers should be to radicalize consciousness and develop and expand the skills needed to advance their needs in union structures as well as unionized and non-unionized workplaces. The coalition of African trade unionists of the 80s and early 90s will provide instructive lessons for us. Lastly, the African community must develop the organizational structures to advance international solidarity work with sisters and brothers in other parts of the diaspora. Imperialism, patriarchy, and racism are international in their respective characters. We need to provide moral and material support to the struggle of Africans and other exploited people around the globe. Too often, international solidarity activists and organizations do not give sufficient attention and resources to campaigns dealing with the suffering of African people. If we look at the massive rape of African women in the Congo, an estimated 250,000 women raped and relative indifference of international solidarity focus. It should be clear that Africans must step up and take the lead on this matter. We do not need to mention Darfur, the conflict in the South Sudan, where reactionary forces in North America and elsewhere are exploiting this matter to score geopolitical points in the Mideast as anti-imperialists. We must support the struggle of Africans everywhere in Latin America, the Caribbean, Africa, Europe, the so-called Middle East, and anywhere else is a spirit of Pan-African international solidarity. Dr. Martin Luther King declared, "Justice, injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere," should guide our solidarity work with all of the oppressed humanity. The radical political tradition of Angela Davis, Walter Rodney, Deion Brands, George Jackson, Assata Shakur, C.R.R. James, Claudia Jones, Amoco Cabral, Ella Baker, Mumia Abdul-Jamal, Omar Wali, Malcolm X, or El-Hajlik El-Shabazz, Shannon Hall, Herbert Harrison, Audre Lorde, among many others, may serve as a guide in our fight for justice, good, and free society. We have no option but to use history and culture as weapons of struggle. Even though that piece was from 2012 and was written by a brother who was in Canada at the University of Toronto, what was stated was germane to our struggle globally as African people on the continent and throughout the diaspora. Using the knowledge of our history for liberation, using the knowledge of who we are as African people. We have a caller, 646-646. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Brother Oshi. I'm just calling to say what's happening, man. I just tuned in to the show. How's everything going, my brother? How was your weekend?
Very well, man. Jay was very well. I had a good weekend. Did a number of things. I didn't get a chance to go to Baba Baruti's complimentarity presentation. I stopped by there and talked with him and seen many other brothers who participated. You know,
how was it?
It was good. It was well attended. It was very good. Yeah. Yeah. You know, because, you know, one of the things that we need to understand is that in order for us to change the dynamics that are happening, we need each other. We need men and women working together. We need to establish good relationships. The reason why we don't have the good community life is because we don't have good family life. You know, and when you live in a society based on individualism, materialism, greed, and violence, it's very hard to establish meaningful, true relationships, let alone marriages. You know, and if there's a problem, Jay, in a society, if there's a negative problem in society, it's more profound in us than anybody else.
The family structure.
Exactly. And so we need that.
The family structure is warped, man. It's one of those days to where you have one segment that has it together, then you have another segment that doesn't have it together, and you know the elders are not there to guide the people, you know, on the level in which the family structure need to be. You know, one of the first things you're supposed to teach your children is how to respect their family members, how to, you know, have relations with family members. Mm-hmm. And whenever you get caught in those situations where that isn't taught and, you know, put out there in the manner in which it's supposed to be, as you see, the family structure breaks down. It's just like our society. When me and you was coming up, family was a whole total different social dynamic than what it was
sure.
Is today.
Well, sure.
Why the society is messed up.
Right. Because when I was coming up, the majority of our people were married. And family was a lot better, even though economically we were a lot poorer. But we were more rich in terms of family dynamics, in terms of family get-togethers, in terms of family working with each other. You know, but once again.
And we looked out for one another.
Yes, we did. But
you know,
but once again,
but now you have a situation where you have a 30-year-old grandmother or something like
yeah.
that. What's she gonna teach? What's she gonna teach her yeah. grandchild?
Well,
it's
Jay, if you follow that the young girl got pregnant at 15, and then you know she had when that baby that she got pregnant with at 15. Now she's 30, that baby's 15, and she got pregnant. So now that 30-year-old yeah. woman's a grandmother. And then 15 years later, she's 45, and she a great-grandmother.
That's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous, you know?
You know, I was having a disagreement with my with a friend of mine about her grandson, how she was upset that her grandson couldn't read and write the way that he was supposed to, and I had to tell her, it's your fault. because you know his mama and daddy couldn't read and write, and you didn't do nothing to make sure that he didn't fall into the same pattern of being able to read and write. You know, because of whatever your situation was, that your son never learned how to read and write, and the mother, you know, can't read and write. So how do you expect them to have him read and write? It's not the job of the school to allow a child to be able to become functioning literate. It's your job as a parent. So if you knew this, you should have did what was ever necessary to make sure that he read it right.
Well,
so
see,
now what you going to do?
Well, see, Jay, we're
to rectify it.
We're constantly abdicating our responsibilities, and that even came out of our captivity because we came in off the plantation. For those who could, we entrusted, but it was a different situation because those were us, and many of those people loved us, so they worked with us. But because then once that integration bull happened, then if you couldn't read and write, you were sent to special ed, and you were labeled this, that, and the other, and you totally dysfunctional. And then even the ones who couldn't read and write, they said to their son and their daughter, please, I want you to do what I couldn't do. And they still became involved in the education of their children. They would go to the PTA meetings. They would encourage, they would talk to the teacher. No, I can't read and write, but I want to make sure my son, my daughter is able to read and write. You see? And so that connection is not there today. Send the kid to school and that's it.
Yeah, and the reality is, how could you expect your oppressor to educate your child? The difference when we were separated from these devils was, you know that the teacher cared about the child. You know that the teacher was going to make sure that the child could read and write. And if he was a problem, they was going to deal with the problem. You know, now today it's a whole different ball game. You're looking for someone. I always tell a person, how do you expect a person that's a Yorugu to educate your child when his child has to compete with your child because of the limited resources in this society? So here it is, if you know your grandchild can't read or write, you only got two options. You either go pay to fix the problem, which is going to cost you money, which to me is money well worth spending, or you just going to be upset and bitch and moan about it. And that's not going to solve no problem because the kid has to learn how to read and write. Unfortunately, if you would have did what you were supposed to and dealt with it from the beginning,
right,
you know you wouldn't have this problem. But either pay up or shut up. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, women don't like to hear you talk to them like that, but, you know, the truth is the truth.
Yeah.
If, you know. You help create the problem.
But see, my thing is...
You could,
yeah.
But you the one who now is upset about a situation that you should have been monitoring from day one because you saw where you went wrong. So, I mean, it's just crazy, man.
Well, Jay, listen. It's a tough situation because in this society, the design is for us to consistently fail. It's not. You're right. They're not supposed to be able to compete openly and honestly in a society. We are relegated as a permanent underclass.
Yeah.
In a society, we are targeted. We are a target. Let me finish. We are a targeted consumer group. All of these things you can see have come to fruition because of how the society is structured and what it has made us do. And so only those who are able to once again step outside of the imposed boundaries that Europeans have placed upon us, or to be able to release the vice grip that they have on our minds, forge new and better ways to prepare ourselves to be independent, to be self-determining, to be liberated, and to be sovereign. And that's the only way. I mean, in fact, one thing would be very good at this very time to say that there's a number of people in this day and age, it's sad to say, who cannot read. So we're establishing online and in communities literacy programs. And the full purpose of the literacy program is to help you read about yourself, you know, to help you learn about yourself, to help you understand who you really are, to begin our history, not in our captivity or enslavement, but to begin our history from the very beginning up to this present day. And as a tool for our liberation, you know,
you know, what's so scared, brother, is, and what's so real is, and we're not observing it collectively as a people the way that we should be. Every ethnic group in this country is surpassing black people.
Yeah.
Every ethnic group.
Yeah.
That's that. Bruh, come on, man.
No, Jay.
How could you be the second or third ethnic group to ever step foot in this country? And here it is, you have all of these other ethnic groups surpassing you. It's no way in hell that's happening.
Well, listen, because why? What have we been trained to believe? What have we been trained to do? And all those other groups who come here, what do they have intact? Their culture, their traditions, their religion, you know, all the things that make them who and what they are. And they band together. You have some Latinos or Mexicans coming here and they're staying 4 or 5 families into a house, pulling their money together. And then they wind up buying apartments. You know, I mean, other groups have come here. Look at all the Indians that come here. Look at the so-called Middle Easterners, the Arabs and the Iraqis and so forth. All the There's not one damn service station I can go to that is ours in my neighborhood. And I live in the middle, in the heart of Atlanta. There's not one.
Amen. And I'm in New York. Matter of fact, let me tell you how deep it is. I'm in court right now trying to get rid of a family who just tried to pull that game that you're talking about, having 4 or 5 families in an apartment, man, and it's a fire hazard. So now I'm in court getting rid of these clowns, trying to get rid of these clowns, because they move in and they want to have 3 other families come and move in. And I didn't really, well, me and my partner didn't know nothing about it until we had a leak in the apartment below them. They flooded the apartment below them. So how much problems and how much money that caused me. And you know, I said to the tenant that got flooded, why you never told nobody about this situation? Mm-hmm. Why didn't you inform us that these people had this type of condition? And you know what the problem was? It was our fault in a sense, because as long as the rent was being paid, there was no damage. They wasn't calling us for nothing or anything like that. We slacked on the job. And now we pay the piper for it. You know what I'm saying? But hey, they do that in their community. That's why, I don't know if you notice it, but you realize it, every other ethnic group always has their own community, so they can do things like that. Mm-hmm. They get away with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? We the only people that don't have no community. And I'm losing thousands of dollars now because of this nonsense. Yeah.
But even,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, but even in the communities that we do have, we still don't run nothing. I say all the time about the income disparity here. Oh, brother, call back when you get a chance. I had a caller that he just decided to leave. Please call back if you get a chance. But anyway, I always mention all the time about here in Atlanta, this is the widest income disparity amongst our people because of the people who have against those who have not. The people who have, a lot of them come here from across the country with tremendous resources. They're entertainers, they're athletes, you know, so they got serious bank because they can build a house here, Jay. Even with a large amount of land, maybe on a lake, all of that for just like $5-7 million. But they can't get that on the East Coast or West Coast. And if they did, it would cost them $15-20 million or more. See? So they come in here. So that income disparity is just constantly growing because there's a serious homeless population here. There's serious economic job situation here. Atlanta's been purported as the gay, I mean, it is the gay, black gay capital. That's another subject. But Atlanta's being purported as the Mecca for us, It's not. It is not. We don't have industry here. We don't have it. We got some businesses, and most of the businesses that we do have is hair salons, braiding, and barbershops and stuff like that. Hell,
but wasn't at one time the biggest black-owned businesses, grocery businesses, and everything was there in Atlanta? I think Russell Construction.
Well, Russell, yeah, that, Herman Russell.
All of those businesses that was created with the under Marion Barry.
No, Maynard Jackson. Under Maynard Jackson.
Maynard Jackson with that building of the airport, yep. All of that stuff.
Sure, and you're right. And
so
you're right.
Not there no more. No. And Tyler Perry, isn't he like one of the biggest employees in Atlanta?
It could be. I don't know. You know, with his movie studio. His movie studio is not far from where I live. You know, his movie studio is right. In fact, it's the old Fort McPherson. And he's been able to get a good portion of that land at Fort McPherson.
You haven't took a tour yet?
Well, you really can. I'm not sure if you really can because maybe they will start opening it up. I took a tour of Fort McPherson, which was very interesting. You know,
okay.
And Tyler Perry, at the time that I took it, he had just got the land, and so now he's opened up the studio. He has many places on his lots. In fact, many of the buildings are named after various actors and actresses. You know,
I got a friend of mine that's moving to Atlanta because he got a job there.
Yeah, I
laughed when he told me.
Is that right? Well, it's still a good place for us. It is one of the better places for us. I mean, hell, I moved from Milwaukee, which is deemed one of the worst places for us. You know, the state of Wisconsin and Milwaukee, one of the worst places for American African people to live, to supposedly one of the better places, but it's not. There is no Mecca. There is no utopia, wow. You know, for
just
African
like
people in America.
Not a Mecca either.
Exactly.
They talk about Harlem, but Harlem is, if you're going to be honest about it, Harlem is a joke, man. I mean, I've been here 55 years. I own like a couple of properties here, you know,
mm-hmm.
And I'll be honest with you, man. It's a joke, man. It's not what it should be. You had people like Charlie Rago was in office for a long time, that didn't put us in the position that we need to be put into, a position that we need to be in as a community. Harlem, they talk about as a black community, but I could be honest and tell you, it's not a black community. It's the ownership is really low, just like you talking about in Atlanta. They got the beauty shop, the braid shop. And the braid shops are not even by indigenous black people. It's by the Africans that come from the continent. And, you know, you may have restaurants that people talk about, but the reality, Sylvia's is the only one I think is black-owned. The other restaurants, you know, part of the black owner is part of a group. I mean, I don't even really know who's the biggest black employer in Harlem other than maybe Sylvia's restaurant,
man,
to be honest. There's no major plumbing, no major construction. Matter of fact, we don't own the grocery stores. We don't own the bodegas. We don't own the dry cleaners. We don't.
Right.
I mean, you
it's
know,
the same here.
I mean, but it's all over the country,
yeah,
like this.
Exactly. It's the same here. It's the same in Milwaukee. It's the same elsewhere. You know,
you have to change it.
Yeah.
And, you know, to be honest with you, I'm going to say it, and people may get mad about it, but we really can't change it. So we have to figure out another direction to where as we can get a stranglehold on something to move us as a people. But the way that it is now, we're in real serious trouble as a people because our so-called leadership hasn't really put together a vision for us and a plan. Everything is predicated on us integrating into whiteness.
Right.
That's what everything is predicated on, that. And unfortunately, because of that, it has just totally took us out of place
sure.
and direction on where we should be going. And I tell you, Oshie, we better figure it out within the next 10 years or we're going to be in serious trouble. We're just going to be at the bottom in every social dynamic position in this country. Yeah, you're going to have your rich Negro peens that, you know, may be all right, but they're going to face some struggles also because other ethnic groups are going to come into power, into position, and they're going to put their foot in their behind because they're not going to deal with them because nobody likes African people. Nobody. Yeah.
Well, I mean, the world, the Europeans' dominance of the world has trained other members of the world to hate us. We have Dr. Clark said, we have no friends. We have no friends.
It's evident.
You know?
We're in trouble, man. We really in trouble. Like this whole thing that Dr. Baroudi had on Saturday, these are just the beginning stepping stones that we need to do and we need to figure out, man. And the elders really need to come together and give us some sort of hindsight on what direction we need to go and how we need to straighten it out, man. Because let me tell you something. There's nothing in this country that black folks is dominating. There's nothing in this country that we are the head of, that we are the forebearers of. There's nothing. There's no direction in anything that I could think of that we're setting the tone for. And that's just real talk, man. Yeah. That's honest and sincere talk. We're in deep trouble. Because
the only large institutions that we have in this country are Christian institutions. You know?
That's garbage. That's predicated on nonsense and a lie. You know? That's like the slave master telling you to act and behave in a certain way, and maybe I won't beat you, or maybe I'll give you an extra biscuit or something like that, man. That's not predicated on you moving forward.
No, because not as a people, because Christian religion perpetuates an idea of individualism as well. But that's what the society is, Jay. Individualism, materialism, greed, and violence. What's in it for me? How can I get mine? How can I get over? That's why relationships don't work. That's why our situation is dire. I agree with you. The only thing that can save us is embracing Pan-Africanism.
Deeper than that. I mean, it gotta be broader than Pan-Africanism because most people don't even understand the principles of Pan-Africanism. And to be truthful with you, it's just like the game that's played on white folks thinking that they can become rich and oppress other people too, so they allow themselves to be misguided and abused and misled. That's the same thing that some of our people look at Pan-Africanism as. You know, instead of understanding the principles of it and using it to move us forward. I mean, we just got to figure something out to the point to where as we survive, I don't know if it's going, you know, someplace and building the communities, changing the minds of a people and then branching out and spreading the word or whatever, you know, or just doing something. But we got to do something. I'll just say this right quick. Imagine if there was a situation to where as we set up a factory that sold nothing but underwear, and we sold it through the black church. Imagine if every black church said that their members were going to wear these underwear, and we use that as a base to build our collective works with one another and use that money to branch out into something else. That's something that maybe we could do.
But see, that's what I'm saying. The black church
would never agree to anything like that because they can't even agree in how to practice their God, religion, spookism. What is the difference between a Pentecostal and a Baptist or whatever nonsense they deal with?
No, who knows what the difference between all those denominations are? Who knows what the difference between all those denominations are in any of those religions? Not just Christianity, but hell, Islam. Sure. But the bottom line is that regardless of whatever the theology is, damn that, we as African people are in deep S-H-I-T, sugar, honey, iced tea.
That's good, baby.
Okay.
My favorite word.
Yep, sugar, honey, iced tea.
My favorite words.
And so the bottom line is that we as African people must put down all the ignorance, all the self-hatred, all the lack of knowledge of self, and I mean, all of that, and say, hey, we have to come together. Because if we don't come together, our demise is has already been planned. And part of that plan is for us to do this to ourselves. To say, see, that they can't, we don't understand, as Minister Farrakhan used to say, the hidden hand.
Our situation, in all honesty, Oshi, in all truthfulness, our situation in this country is dire. Just like our situation around the world is dire.
Yes.
We just don't understand it, man.
Yes.
We don't even see how we as a family, as a community, on all social status within this country, economically, education, and everything, in all truthfulness, on the whole, we're regressing.
Yeah.
We're regressing economically, educationally, all of these things. Like you said, the marriage rate is down, the birth rate, the wealth
rate. All
of
that.
Everything in the black community is down, and we're not taking a heed to it, and we're looking for clouds like the CBC and these pork chop chicken eating preachers to guide us and lead us. And brother, let me tell you something. They doing a bad, bad, bad job. But listen, Oshi, I know
all
you
right,
gotta
brother.
Go.
I gotta go.
To Wednesday.
All right, dear brother. All right.
Thank you for what you do. There's nobody who do it like you, brother. Just keep up spreading the message, man.
Well, hey, brother, listen, I'm consistent. I'm constant. I'm here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern if I can help myself. If I can't, that's a reason. But I'm here, and I'm saying the same thing. I'm talking about independence. I'm talking about self-determination. I'm talking about liberation, and I'm talking about sovereignty for us as a people. Brothers and sisters, I'm going to end this program. We end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they sure in hell don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, let us come together. Let us come together as African people on the continent throughout the diaspora. Our unity is our only salvation. Not any religion, not any theology. None of that. Our unity, our putting away all the superficial stuff, all the negative things, all of the ignorance, all of that, and coming together as African people. Brothers and sisters, Shem Hotep means go in peace. Esante Sana means thank you. Bibi Fori means our victorious destiny. We will be victorious if we put our hearts and mind to it. We will be victorious. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful day. I hope you'll be able to join us on Wednesday. Peace, family.